rectified the last situation when I was here last time. Cynthia wasn't here. And even though I told you it wasn't my fault, of course, you know, I remember the looks, and she's back. So I'm off the hook. But it is certainly a delight for both of us to be here. We appreciate all of you that you do for us, because not only when we're here, we're encouraged by you, but oftentimes we know the prayers, the kind deeds, and all of the good things that you do. Even sometimes the phone calls and stuff of that sort, and every one of those things are very important to us. They're meaningful to us, and we appreciate your support in the work. Of course, you know that I have moved a little bit further north in the work. I'm working there in with the church there in Bluffton, South Carolina. It's not too much further up than Savannah and Garden City, but a small work, but got a group of people who want to serve the Lord, and in that area we have to have those kind of soldiers, and so we're at it. And, of course, I'll be around afterwards, and if you have any questions about what we're doing there, feel free to ask me. But I'll tell you one thing that we recently were able to do is get on the campus over there. The University of South Carolina has a branch there in Bluffton. And so we were blessed enough to get an open door there. We set up a table there during their orientation week. We did this on Friday. And even though it was hot and it was humid, we had a lot of students that came by our table and signed up for a Bible study that we are scheduled to start on September 11th. So about 38, 39 contacts there. So you got a lot of praying to do, because we got to get that work done and making those contacts and revisiting. We need your help. So please keep us in your prayers, and we're looking forward to that area. That's what we need. We've got to be able to get in there and start opening the doors up around there, and the students, and certainly is a great opportunity for us. But with all that said, we thank you very much for your support and your encouragement. It means so much to us. If you would, turn your books, your Bibles, to the book of Daniel. And what I'd like for us to do is take for a few minutes and just think about, here's this servant of the Most High God that we read about and we know. And I'm hoping I'm not going to mess up something here with the computer, but there we go. All right, I knew it was somewhere around here. But, you know, when you think about Daniel, he was an individual that, when you boil it all down, he was very young when he's taken away from his home, and he goes to a foreign land. But he doesn't go there in times where, you know, hey, he's going on a vacation and going to be a tourist there. He doesn't go there because he's going to extend his education. He's going to learn a lot of things. But he's going at a time when his nation is being punished by God, that God has had enough of the debaucheries of Judah. And the hammer is finally falling, and God's justice is being rendered and dished out. But Daniel wasn't necessarily, when you look at Daniel, you could say, well, if it was up to Daniel, if God would have been just looking at him, well, Judah would have been spared. Daniel was a great servant of God. But he goes there at a very young age, and guess what? He is going to bear the punishment with all the rest of those people, because he's left everything and he's there. And of course, in the first chapter, as we go there, we see that he's there. The king is asking for young men from the captives to come and to serve in his courts. And when you look down in verse 5, it says, the king appointed for them a daily provision of the king's delicacies and of the wine which he drank, and 3 years of training for them, so that at the end of that time they might serve before the king. So, you know, things are moving on here a little bit. And if you drop down to verse 8, it's interesting, because Daniel's there, and he's, guess what? He's also with his friends, and
there we go.
All right, there we go. He's there with his friends, and guess what's happened also? You know, it's one thing to be taken away from your home, but then you've been given a new name, right? Everything is to take you away from what you used to be and what you knew and what you were. And now even the food is set before you so that you can serve this heathen king now. and even all those provisions. Now, that seemed like it's a nice thing, but the Bible says in verse 8, but Daniel purposed in his heart that he would not defile himself with the portions of the king's delicacies, nor with the wine which he drank. Therefore, he requested of the chief of the eunuchs that he may not defile himself. And, of course, in verse 9, it talks about how God brought about this favor with Daniel in the eyes of this chief eunuch. And, of course, I like the wording that the scriptures give us there. That Daniel here, with all these things going on, he's young, he's away from home, you know, he's in the land of punishment. And guess what he does? He purposes in his heart something. He makes up in his mind. He comes to that point where, you know, we know what it means to purpose something in your heart. Well, we should know that, right, as Christians, because we have to purpose things too. It means that you buckle down and you become steadfast and you become unmovable and you are determined that you're going to do something or not do something. And in this case, Daniel says that even though I'm in a foreign land, I'm not going to go along with where I'm at. My surroundings are not going to change me. He purposed to continue to serve God, didn't he? He purposed to make sure that he continued in that. And we as Christians, we have great things and goals, spiritual goals that we have set before us, that we have in our minds. But you know, the only way we accomplish those things is if we have that purpose of heart, that we have determined that that's how we're going to walk. We live in a society and a time where, guess what? You know, the idea that people almost think it's some kind of a great value to not be steadfast, to be wishy-washy, to be like we used to say when I was a kid, you know, like on and off like a light. You know, flip the switch. But Daniel has determined that we're not going to do that. And he's young, and he's going to stick with God. He's in a foreign land. His people are being punished for things. And Daniel, you know, guess what? He wasn't a part of that abomination that led to that, but he is there. And sometimes when bad things happen to people and they get in situations that are difficult and maybe they didn't even have anything to do with them, they lose their purpose, you see. And sometimes when you're in a foreign land, you know how it is and you're surrounded by a bunch of bad stuff, it's easy to get like that old lizard. We used to have them at home. And you go out there around those green bushes and that lizard, you couldn't see him. He'd walk out there a little bit and get around some of the brown leaves. And that rascal would change colors. He's always hiding in those places. But you can't be a good Christian that way, can you? You can't be Daniel either. In the land of captivity, you couldn't do it, and he knew it. So he purposed to continue to serve his God. He also purposed that he wouldn't defile himself with the surroundings that were there. Those things were very inviting. Think about the church at Corinth was told in the second book to come out from among them and be separate, that quote out of the Old Testament. Paul's going to tell Timothy to flee those youthful lusts, those things that surround you. You run from those things. You get away from those things. Daniel purposed in his heart not to compromise. Paul even remember when the Judaizing teachers came to Antioch, and he remembers that confrontation there in Galatians 2, and he says that we didn't yield in submission to them, not even for a moment. No compromise. Today, so many times, you know it just like I do, that it's amazing how people, they used to stand firm on sound doctrine. They weren't yielding at all, and then all of a sudden, you know, so-and-so believes this, and they think this, and they read a book, and the next thing you know, sound doctrine is being compromised. Daniel had that purpose not to do it. And I like also, because we have a lot of young people here this morning, I like the idea that with Daniel, at a very young age, he was able to do this. He was able to serve God at a very young age without yielding, without compromising, and he had that purpose. Sometimes, young people, there's a lot of things young people can't necessarily do. Now, if we went to go to have brain surgery, and we see some, you know, 14-year-old, 15, 16-year-old standing there saying, hey, I'm going to come take care of the surgery, we're going to be a little upset because we're going to say, he's been around long enough to do something like that. If we get on an airplane, you look up there, and that young guy, you know, it's, you know, wait a minute. You're not old enough to do that, you know. We know you want to do it, but you're not old enough to do it. But when it comes down to purposing to serve the living God, that's something that young people can do. They can do it very well. And they can be strong in the Lord. You see, they can be mighty. They can change their environment because they can do this, you see. One of maybe the biggest mistakes we make in among the Lord's church is sometimes we say we're going to wait and teach our children all these things like Daniel had. We'll wait until they get older because we don't want to cram too much on them right now because they don't understand it. We'll say all those things. Those are excuses. Because the devil comes along, and when does the devil start working to purpose our children's hearts? I think that sucker starts as soon as they take that first breath. He doesn't back off a bit, does he? There are children from the time before they can walk, they have been inundated with every influence of evil that there can possibly be. And then, of course, we see it in our societies. We see children's very young ages. They'll imitate those things that are evil, and sometimes they won't even get it out of their mind. You know, while we were over at the college the other day, it was interesting. We met a lot of lovely young people. It was the first time coming to student to the college there. There was one lady that came along, and it was sad because she couldn't have been no more than 20. And she was telling us all about this New Age doctrine that she had embraced. And she knew it good. She knew that crazy doctrine. She was talking about things like that women had the ability to basically recreate themselves. If all the men population died off, that women would be able to actually create without a man. Oh, and that wasn't the craziest of it, the things that she was saying. But she knew it inside and out. She'd been taught that. She said that she was a god to herself. They can learn things. But Daniel learned how to serve the living God at a young age. And we are on the way to that too. Our young people, I'm glad you're here this morning. Because guess what? You're on the way. But understand, even in difficult times, have that purpose in your mind, just like a Daniel did, where he was going to serve the living God. He wasn't going to take the easy way. He wasn't going to compromise. He wasn't going to blend in. He stood firm. And guess what? He went and he said, look, we're not eating that. And guess what? God delivered him. God took care of him. Over in the book of 1 Peter, the second chapter, and down in verse 11, it says, beloved, I beg you as sojourners and pilgrims, abstain from fleshly lusts which wage war against the soul, having your conduct honorable among the Gentiles, that when they speak against you as evildoers, that they may be made by your good works, which they observe, glorify God in the day of visitation. And if you would go back up to the book of Acts, it's an interesting thing that occurs when the gospel is being spread and it finally reaches Antioch. And, of course, now all of a sudden, those that are, you know, because the gospel is just going, they were just teaching to the Jews. And now all of a sudden, we got these others that are receiving the gospel. And in the 11th chapter, the church in Jerusalem says, we're going to send Barnabas over to Antioch. And the Bible says, and if you would, we'll just pick up in verse 22. It says, then the news of these things came to the ears of the church in Jerusalem. And they sent out Barnabas to go as far as Antioch. When he came and he seen the grace of God, he was glad and encouraged them all with purpose of heart. With purpose of heart, they should continue with the Lord. And isn't that what it is? We have that same thing in us. It wasn't just merely the fact that Daniel was someone who was just doing something odd. In our Christianity today, we can imitate the example of Daniel in doing those things that are good. Well, let's look a little bit further. Because, you know, when you think about it, you go over here and go back over to Daniel, the second chapter. Well, old Nebuchadnezzar, he has this dream, doesn't he? And Nebuchadnezzar he wasn't a dummy at all. He has all of these, you know, magicians and, you know, Chaldean sorcerers and astrologers. They're all around him, you know, and they're making it good. They're in the king's court, you know, and all the wise men. And so, you know, basically if he comes along and he says, well, this is what I dreamed last night. Well, they come on, they just tell them, well, this is what it means. And they don't have a clue what it meant. So the king throws a little curveball at him. He says, what I want you to do is I want you to tell me the dream and then tell me the interpretation of it. Because if you know the dream, then you'll be able to do that. That's pretty good reasoning. Well, of course, they go to hemming and hawing, and they're trying to find a way of getting out of this. And verse 7 says, they answered again and said, let the king tell his servants a dream, and we will give its interpretation. The king answered and said, I know for certain that you would gain time because you see that my decision is firm. If you do not make known the dream to me, there is only one decree for you. For you have agreed to speak lying and corrupt words before me till the time has changed. Therefore, tell me the dream, and I shall know that you can give me its interpretation. Look what they say. The Chaldeans answered the king and said, there is not a man on earth who can tell the king's matters. Therefore, no king, no lord, or ruler has ever asked such things of any magician, astrologer, or Chaldean. It is a difficult thing that the king requests, and there is no other who can tell it to the king except the gods whose dwelling is not with flesh. For this reason, the king was angry and was furious and gave the command to destroy all the wise men of Babylon. So the decree went out, and they began killing the wise men, and they sought Daniel and his companions to kill them. That's Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, right? And of course, they're coming and they're looking for Daniel to kill him as well. He's just kind of clumped in there. Sometimes, as much as you want to be separated, you can get clumped in by the world. And there's going to be difficult times that we're going to face. There's going to be challenging things. There are going to be things that's going to threaten our existence. It's going to threaten what our serenity, our peace. It's going to be threatened. That's the world we live in. That's the times we live in. And even when you try to get away from it, you're going to still be drawn into things sometimes that you just don't wish that you had a different option. Well, they're after old Daniel. Daniel hadn't done anything wrong. He hadn't contaminated himself. He was a good man, and they're going to kill him too. But of course, Daniel has God. And Daniel, of course, he buys a little bit of time, and I think it's interesting. Instead of Daniel being so worried about saving his life and hitting the panic button, Daniel goes and starts praying to God. Could it be, even among us as Christians, that we don't depend on prayer like we should? I know I need to improve my prayer life. Prayer puts us, here's a servant of God. Who do you go to when you're in trouble? The same one we should be going to daily and all the time, right? The same God that's delivered us and has been there for us. And Daniel does that. And Daniel goes there, and of course, in his going, he goes and he tells Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego about the situation. And then down in verse 18, that they may seek mercy from God, the God of heaven, concerning this secret, so that Daniel and his companions may not perish with the rest of the wise men of Babylon. Then the secret was revealed to Daniel in a night vision. So Daniel blessed the God of heaven. Daniel answered and said, blessed be the name of God forever and ever, for wisdom and might are his. And he changes the times and the seasons. He removes kings and he raises up kings. He gives wisdom to the wise and knowledge to those who have understanding. He reveals deep and secret things. He knows what is in the darkness, and light dwells within him. I thank you and praise you, O God of my fathers. You have given me wisdom and might, and have now made known to me what we asked of you, for you have made known to us the king's demand. So, of course, Daniel goes, and as you know, he tells the dream and its interpretation. Like, remember, no one could do that. But then Daniel, if you think about it, Daniel never forgets who he is, who he serves, and who he belongs to. Because Daniel goes to God, and then Daniel comes around and he gives God the credit for this situation. He doesn't hit the panic button and go berserk. but he goes to God because he never forgets who he is, even in a foreign land. Paul talked about the idea over in Galatians about, you know, it's no longer him who lives, but Christ who lives within him. That's us, isn't it? Here's that purpose of heart. Here's that determination. That's who we serve. That's who we're going to live for each and every day, whether or not it's at school or at work, whether or not it's in our communities, among our family members. It is Christ who lives within us, you see. And that's who we serve, and that's who we follow after. You go a little bit further, and in the second chapter, of course, as he starts to tell them about the dream that is there, and of course, I know you've probably read many times this, and for time's sake, it'd be lovely to read all of it, but for time's sake, you can refer back to that second chapter about the statue that's there, about the prophecies of the kingdom. And here's Daniel in the midst of that. So in verse 46, after he tells him all this, look what happens. Then King Nebuchadnezzar fell on his face, prostrate before Daniel, and commanded that they should present an offering, an incense to him. The king answered Daniel and said, "Truly, your God is the God of gods, the Lord of kings, and a revealer of secrets, since you could reveal this secret." Here's this mighty king who's given commands to wipe out everybody, right? All of these magicians, he's going to wipe them all out. But yet here now, because Daniel puts God first, and because Daniel serves God, you see, and the king recognizes that, he recognizes the greatness of God. We live in a time in a society that is, they are just desperate for God. And I'm not talking about all this stuff that they get from the denominational world. Because you know what? When you entertain and feed people all the time and you take care of all of those physical things, they just blend into being just no more than just an instrument of the world. People need God. They need to realize this great and powerful God. They need to be able to walk outside and look up into the sky and see the sun and recognize there's a powerful God that made that. They need to be able to look in as they're walking through the grass and realize that a human being couldn't even have made a blade of grass. They need to recognize that there's this great power that is there so that they'll humble themselves down. And that's our mission. That's our work. That's what it is. It's not our job to go on out here trying to take care of all of their physical needs, because, you know, there's enough organizations to take care of all that stuff. There's enough ways to deal with all that. We are the people of God. We can't forget who we belong to, even in these days and times. We need to be those ones where, you know, as Matthew 5 talks about, let your light so shine before men, they may see your good works and glorify God, you see, in heaven. Well, in down in verse 48, it's interesting too, because when Daniel, you know, he interprets the dream and everything, and then look what he does next. It says, then the king promoted Daniel and gave him many great gifts, and he made him ruler over the whole province of Babylon and chief administrator over all the wise men of Babylon. Pretty good, isn't it? Also, now look what Daniel does. Also, Daniel petitioned the king, and he set Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego over the affairs of the providence of Babylon, but Daniel sat in the gate of the king. Don't you think it's interesting that Daniel gets prosperity here? And he's still a pretty young man. He gets prosperity here, and guess who he thinks about? My friends. Isn't it a wonderful thing in Christianity? Over in Romans 12 and verse 10, it mentions the idea to us. Let's just turn over there and read it, you know, instead of just quoting. It's a very interesting passage. Romans 12 is an interesting chapter. Brother Amos, I know you were working on Romans 12 a little bit there today, but look what he says in verse 10. He says, be kindly affectionate to one another with brotherly love and honor, giving preference to one another. You know what that tells us? That tells us that we don't forget who we are, who we belong to, and what we're doing here in this pilgrim land that we're in. We look out for each other. And Daniel, the first thing, when he gets prosperity, what's on his mind is, I want to make it easier on my brother. I prefer them. I'm not going to leave them behind. You know, loyalty is a big deal, isn't it? But maybe it's one of those things that we are losing in our society. People ain't loyal to nothing anymore. But that should not be the way it is among us, though, right? We can imitate this loyalty to Daniel. Daniel is prospered, and the first things he's thinking about, he's going to go there. Think about that. You get a promotion, and the first thing you're starting to ask for something, you know? You don't do that. And they say, well, I shouldn't have gave you the promotion. You're bugging me about something else. He comes along there, and the first thing he goes up to the king, this petition he makes, as the scriptures say, he's petitioning for his friends, because he's not going to leave them behind. There's a preference that is there. There's a love, that's a care that is there, even in times of prosperity. So Daniel showed us. He shows us all these things, this character that he had that was there. You go to the fifth chapter, you see the same mentality, and, of course, the handwriting on the wall, and he's promised, of course, everything. I'll give you everything. And by the king. And in verse 17, then Daniel answered and said before the king, let your gifts be for yourself and give your rewards to another. Yet I will read the writing to the king and make known to him the interpretation. And of course, you know what Daniel told the king as he is, this is Nebuchadnezzar's son, as he is, offended God in the sense of bringing out the instruments in their big party that was there, the vessels from the temple. And the handwriting comes out. And so that's the reference there. And there was a promise that, I'm going to give you all these things, but Daniel's not going to be bought by things and possessions. Again, he could, think about it. He's going to spend his whole life in the land of captivity. But he's never going to forget who he was. He's never going to buy into the speech of the surroundings. He's never going to be influenced by it. I remember when I worked at UPS, there was always a warning that was out. They said, beware of the golden handcuffs. And what that was the idea that don't get so hung up in prosperity and taking the next promotion that you become a slave to what you are pursuing. Don't allow that to control you. Don't allow it to change you. Don't allow it to be the ruling thing in your life. Because a lot of times when the world puts its tentacles out, it comes with a cost, doesn't it? And they want something in return. And a lot of times what they want in return is the devil's wishes, and that is to tone us down a little bit and to make us less of what we should be before our great God. We are Christians. We, as Jesus said over in Luke 12 and verse 15, we're not, you see. A man's life is not made up of the things that he possesses. And over in 1 Peter again, the first chapter, Peter there talks to the Christians there, and here's a message that we also get to pick up on that's important to us. And if you look down in verse... let's just pick up in verse 17. We'll just read a couple verses. The Bible says, and if you call on the Father, who without partiality judges according to each one's work, conduct yourselves throughout the time of your stay here in fear, knowing that you were not redeemed with corruptible things like silver or gold from your aimless conduct received by tradition from your fathers, but with the precious blood of Christ, as of a lamb without blemish and without spot. Isn't it a beautiful thing? We are already purchased. Daniel knew who he belonged to. We know who we belong to. We're already purchased. It's a big old not for sale sign up on our souls, isn't it? We are not for sale. And there's no price that can be offered, you see, to buy us, because we've been bought with the most precious price. Think about how valuable a Christian is. We can talk about things and possessions and accomplishments, but think about the greatest accomplishment that everybody, it makes us all one, doesn't it? Because we all have that same value. We've been purchased by the blood of Jesus Christ. You can't get a higher price. Most of the time, you think about where we came from, we were destitute. There was no one that came into Christ as spiritually rich. Everybody, no matter who we are, or how old we were when we came in, or what we were doing, we were all destitute. And there was no value to us. No one else valued us. The world didn't even. We were rejects, right? Across the board, the devil had ruined us. We had crashed in the side of a mountain. How many times you go there and see a plane crash and pieces are all over the place, and we go out there and say, boy, this is valuable stuff out here. No, it's a wreck. But God was the one who saw value in us. And, you know, if you go to, you know, think about it. You go somewhere and there's a salvage yard and there's old beat up cars. You don't go out there and pay top price. You go over and try to wiggle that thing down to pay the little as you can, because it's ruined. God didn't do that. God did the opposite of that. He went to heaven and he picked the most valuable thing in heaven, Jesus, the most valuable one, and he took that precious blood. And he purchased us with that. So Daniel knew his value, and we as Christians certainly have to know our value. And guess what? The world doesn't offer us anything. There's no price that's going to buy our souls. It shouldn't be, right? And of course, you know, there's a lot more to say about Daniel, and I'm not going to be able to get all of Daniel done, but you know, it's interesting when he goes into that lion's den, isn't it? What's going to be our lion's den? Well, old Daniel didn't do anything wrong, but Daniel didn't turn back from serving God. When they come up with that scheme, no petitions. Well, that was just to set up Daniel, because he couldn't get him any other way. The world's going to do the same thing. We're going to be persecuted. We're going to be worked against, and people are going to set us up. They're going to do all those kinds of things, and we shouldn't get all surprised and get all out of shape. And we're going to leave the Lord because, you know, we have all this bad stuff, but that's the way it's going to be. The king was worried about Daniel, wasn't he? And he came and he told Daniel, as they sealed Daniel up in that lion's den, your God, whom you continually serve, he will deliver you. And the next morning he comes, was your God able to do it? And yes, O king. And they pulled Daniel up out of that lion's den. You know what? We'll get pulled out of the lion's den too. Daniel was a servant of the Most High God. And there are so many other things. And when you end the book of Daniel, Daniel comes along and God talks to Daniel about his inheritance. God tells Daniel that it's time for him to rest, his servant, this mighty servant. He called him beloved. He called him greatly, man greatly beloved by God. On a couple of occasions, as you draw to the end of the book. And then at the very end of it, he says in verse 13 of chapter 12, but you go your way till the end, for you shall rest and will arise to your inheritance at the end of days. As Daniel was a servant that had an inheritance, we're servants of God that have an inheritance set before us. How are you doing? And making sure that you've accomplished the Lord's work so that you can also be told by God, isn't it a nice thing? You go rest now because your inheritance is the next thing. That's got to be the message for us, because the New Testament tells us that, and I love it. We can have an inheritance just like him. And how are you doing on that? If you're a Christian and you're struggling with your faith, if you're struggling with being faithful to the God, hopefully Daniel will be just one of those Old Testament reminders to cause you to gear up and purpose in your heart that you're going to serve the living God, because that inheritance is set before you, but you've got to change. Maybe you're here this morning by invitation, or maybe you've been studying with some of the members here and you're contemplating your soul's salvation. Jesus said in Mark 16:16, he that believes and is baptized shall be saved, he that believes not shall be condemned. Jesus was talking about that eternal soul salvation. He was talking about that inheritance. Are you ready for your inheritance? Will you come forward while we stand and sing the song of encouragement at this time?